extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer. It's Monday. It's Matt Doyle. Match day 10 recap coming your way. The best thing we saw. Flying back heels, more of Vander Magic, and much, much more from a wild match day 10. Plus, in all caps, Matt Doyle eats crow and apologizes profusely for his disrespect of the Colorado Rapids. Chicho Arango versus Lionel Messi. It's neck and neck. Who's the Landon Donovan MLS MVP frontrunner? Are the Galaxy a true contender after a vintage bonkers Cali Classico? How about the Whitecaps, who beat the, they might actually be whack Sounders in Seattle. In Kansas City, St. Louis sent a clear message. Say the four words, hit the weight room. But Peter Vermees doesn't seem particularly worried about more drop points at home. We'll also take a closer look at the crew's relative struggles and a big week in CONCA Champions. Plus, we rank the MLS managers under the most pressure. 10 match days, Doyle. It has flown by or it's creeped. It really just depends on the moment that I'm thinking about it. How real is all of this? All the results, all the performances, all the realities that teams find themselves in Major League Soccer.
I feel like it's 75% real. We're approaching a good enough sample size to say, okay, you are what your record says you are. But also, certain teams have had pretty easy schedules at this point, been able to take advantage of them. Teams like Columbus and Miami, which the two, I think they're the class of the league, those two, they've had brutally tough schedules. And so they're maybe not as far above the fray as I think they would otherwise be. But, you know, we know the Fire are bad. We know the Quakes are bad. We know... You know,
don't let FC Dallas get away here.
Dallas is in trouble. New England's in trouble. I think that's very real. Austin being 13th in the overall standings, I think that might be a little fake, but like good on them for winning three of their past four.
There's some of like that. Yeah, some of the excuses are starting to go away. And yeah, they're not always excuses. They're real. But, you know, look, like all those teams that were in CONCA Champions, and I'm like full on board. I am calling it CONCA Champions.
Okay.
I cannot stop calling it Champions League. I just got to go CONCA Champions, so FYI for everybody out there. Yeah, that excuse is gone. Like, some of the midweek stuff is gone. You're not double dipping unless you're the crew, and they've had a little bit of a slump right now. So, yeah, let's go. Best thing you saw. All caps, the Rapids?
All caps, the Rapids, baby. They got it done at home against a very poor FC Dallas team. For those who don't understand or know the origin of this, last week, when the Rapids were thumping San Jose, I tweeted something to the effect of, like, this has got to be the low point for the Quakes, because they are losing 3-0 at home to, in all caps, the Rapids. It was the first road win by 3-plus goals for Colorado in half a decade. It was only like their fourth in the past 15 years. Rapids fans and players, and I believe one player's mom, took offense at that.
I saw the Georgi Mihailovic Instagram post after this win.
It's becoming a thing, right?
And the Rapids in all caps was his caption after this win. You are inserting yourself in the zeitgeist. You are driving narratives and storylines, and I am so proud of you.
Well, I feel like I'm Andrew Wiebe with this one. But no, like teams find, professional athletes find any slight, real or perceived, and use it as fuel. And this has created a rallying point for Colorado. Now, a 2-1 home win over an FC Dallas team that's an absolute train wreck is not a lot to brag about. But the way that this system is functioning right now under Chris Armas, who is having himself a redemption season as head coach, this was much better than a 2-1 performance, right? They're able to create those overloads on the left side, get everybody forward. And then the way it works is the right back, Keegan Rosenberry, this week provides attacking width if they want to switch. And Kevin Cabral, the left winger, he provides attacking depth. And Cabral has one major fault as a soccer player, which is he cannot kick the ball into the net. It limits what he's capable of. But his off-ball movement has always been fantastic. So he's like they're creating penetration every time upfield. 2-1 really flattered FC Dallas. If Cabral could finish, this would have been, 4-0 by halftime. But also, if Cabral could finish, he wouldn't be playing in MLS.
15 points right now for the Colorado Rapids in fourth in the Western Conference. That's pretty incredible. Especially
How real is it, Weeby?
75% real. I think I'm going to stick with your number on this. All the way. There's definitely an issue for me still in that Georgie is not involved nearly enough. Like the most ball dominant.
I knew you were going to say
player
that.
On this team is Cole Bassett. Everything's going through Cole Bassett.
And I knew you were going to say that. And so I did a little research.
You set me up.
Our friends at American Soccer Analysis, their data is just top notch, and they have their sort of live spreadsheets. And if you sort by their passing data, now Georgie is down at 13.5% of Colorado's touches in the attacking third, which is low for a primary attacker, but he's still hitting 19.5 passes per 90 in the attacking third, which is more than, for example, Lionel Messi. So he's getting on the ball. They're just sharing, they're spreading the wealth a lot, and it's all aimed at getting Cabral through the lines or hitting those big switches out to the right side. And then the right winger sort of functions as a second forward, which I think we all kind of thought that's how it would play out at the start of the season. The big difference is we thought that Georgie would be the attacking left winger and that Cole Bassett would be a pressing 10. Now, what's happened is with the injury to Connor Ronan, and the French D mid that they got this offseason.
I think it's Lamina Diak.
There you go. Lamina Diak not really playing his way into the rotation. Cole Bassett has had to drop back. The other thing in play as a number eight, the other thing that's happened there is Oliver Larraz, the 21, 22-year-old homegrown kid, he's turned into a really good number six. So good, in fact, that he just sits and protects, and that allows Cole Bassett to release earlier into the attack. So they're creating different types of attacking patterns and overloads. And I actually think over the past 3-4 weeks, Georgie's been more and more involved, even though his touch percentage in the final third isn't as high as you obviously want it to be. You hear that, Rapids fans? Andrew Weeby does not like the way
I'm just trying to get on Georgie's Instagram. Obviously, that's my entire goal here. I don't think they create enough good opportunities, even in the way that they're playing right now. It's less than one non-penalty expected goal per game for them. There's been a lot of penalty kicks, which Hafa Navahu has feasted on, but he's not getting the same service. I'm not saying it's not real. I'm just saying give it a little bit more time to play out, a little more tape for other teams to look at, and I want to see some better performances from the guys that are supposed to be making the final pass and finishing goals.
Yeah,
we'll see.
It's the finishing. Yeah. Because between Navahu and Cabral, like those are two of your three front runners. That's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. But look, the Pids have won three of the last four. LAFC at San Jose, Dallas. The other win they have this year was at RSL, so that's a good one. And since opening weekend, when the Portland Timbers wiped the floor with them, it's 4-1-3. So even if you want more, even if I'd like to see Georgie just a little bit more involved as the primary chance creator, it's been very good.
This has got to drive fans around the league nuts, though, because we always open this show with like 10, 15 minutes on the biggest teams in MLS.
Exactly. Well, next five for the Rapids against some of the biggest teams. Three on the road, at Cincy, at NYC, the next two. San Jose at home. No offense, San Jose, but you're all caps right now. Vancouver at home. That'll be a tough one. Then out at RSL again to finish that one off. So Rapids have something to prove, but they're sitting right up there.
By the way,
I
think if they win that game at RSL, they'll have clinched Rocky Mountain Cup.
Which has not been the norm
for
many, many, many years. All right, best thing I saw. Prince Owusu, come on down. The back heel flick goal to beat the Revs in Toronto. Three goals in his last, two games for Prince? He's a single-name player at this point. Drop the Owusu. I'm not trying to, take away from your familial history here. But come on, you're Prince, man. That goal's Purple Rain. Look, Prince obviously planned that out. It was an incredibly structured and beautiful song. But how does he do this? How intentional is this? It's like he launched himself in the air and he's like, oh, okay, I'll just throw my leg at that.
What did Brad say? Because you were on the wrap-up.
He said, I've never scored anything like that. Yeah. He says it's intentional, which, yeah, it has to be to make that sort of play on the ball. But you can't even recognize the brilliance until you watch it back in slow-mo. Live feed, I was like, he did what and how? Is that an own goal? What did Prince Owusu just do? It's one of the most incredible goals I've ever seen. It's Zlatan-esque. It's that sort of...
Yeah, it's a Zlatan-style finish.
Acrobatic, yeah. Instinctual, like, I have a thought that I might not even have access to in this moment, but my body just executes on. Congratulations to Prince Owusu. The other one for me is Evander. Again this week, casually spectacular. That's my new phrase for him, because he just looks like he's kind of, you know, a little languid. He's, you know, he's going through the motions, and then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, he's for sure going to shoot this, right? But his body language is so unpredictable that he plays the extra pass to Moreno in the middle, and the Timbers just score this incredible team goal. So if you haven't watched that one, go back and check it out. Since this is a list, and lists have to be at least three items long, shout out Tani Olosheyi. Three goals so far this season, Doyle. And the goal he scored in Charlotte, first of all, the run in behind Bill Tuiloma, and then the presence of mind and the understanding of the angles, and then the technical execution to hit that dipping first time off the post and in. Tani looks like a player.
He does. He does. They did a nice job developing him. I think he got a few games in MLS Next Pro, and then they did a smart thing, and they loaned him out to San Antonio in USL Championship last year, and that got him at high level a lot of reps. And he delivered at that level, and that the next step naturally was to be in the rotation this year. Well, he's scoring goals off the bench to start the season, and Eric Ramsey said, okay, if he's scoring goals, you eventually win the job. And so for 1 week and probably next week as well, Tani's the starting number nine, and you can't argue with it. He was awesome in more than just creating space and finishing that chance. I thought he did a lot of work against the ball for Minnesota, and that gave Charlotte all kinds of problems building out.
Yeah, key one was against the ball, right? Like, Charlotte, even at home, has not been a team that wants the ball. Yeah. They want to play over your lines, play direct, go win second balls, get at goal. Their forwards are guys that don't exactly want to drop in and combine, and it all makes sense. Like, the ceiling was a little bit lower because they don't have the DPs yet, but the floor was raised for Charlotte. But, man, they got the brakes beat off them at Bank of America by a rotated Minnesota team. Credit to Eric Ramsey. He said, we wanted to bring energy. We didn't want to let them have even a moment to breathe, so I shifted the lineup a little bit, gave some hungry guys an opportunity who had been performing off the bench, Tani among them. And this was embarrassing, I think, for Charlotte.
I mean, it was their first home loss in almost a year. I think May 20th of last year was their last home loss. So I give them something of a mulligan for this one. They were just caught out, but like, this is going to be the test for Dean Smith. As teams collect more tape on what his Charlotte side are going to do, they're going to have to be better with the ball, because teams aren't going to let them just counterattack through the wings, which is what they've been doing for the first 2 months. And that's a test for every manager, right? Like, the big ones are, you know, team unity, player development, and tactical evolution. You have to check all three if you want to win stuff in this league. And we're at that point now in this season. Like, I think Dean Smith has done a really good job the first 2 months, but like, okay, the tests are going to start to be different now. I just want to mention really good coverage, local coverage of this Minnesota United team. Both local newspapers up there cover every single game and do a good job of not just like printing quotes in the score. They actually get into a little bit of the tactical breakdowns. Some of the wrinkles Eric Ramsey was throwing into this game, they went into that in detail. And then, you know, blogs like 55-1, a lot of people have been covering soccer for a long time up there. It's really nice to see that level of detail in the local coverage.
I completely agree with you. Utterly reliant on those folks to help me understand the context and everything going on. I think all of the people covering soccer in Minnesota right now have to be delighted by Eric Ramsey.
Yep.
As well, coming in, speaks both English and Spanish, is doing it in press conferences back and forth. But more importantly, just feels like an open book in a lot of ways that it hasn't always been for the Loons under Adrian Heath. And look, those are personality things. Every manager is entitled to handle things the way that they want to or share the things that they want to. But Eric Ramsey just feels like he's come into the Twin Cities and just said, hey, it's all on the table. I'll talk about it. Let's see where this thing can go. And it certainly was a success on Sunday.
Is Robin Lud the most underrated player in MLS?
It's hard to argue against that.
Because 2 years ago, we were like, this guy's the best number eight in MLS. And a year before that, we're like, this guy, he's not going to put up a ton of goals as a winger, but like he's always involved. He makes everyone better. And then, you know, when they couldn't find a center for it, like, man, Robin Lud's really useful as a false nine.
Is he a rich man's Yuya Kubo?
I think he might be.
He might be.
I pulled the numbers on it. He's like, in terms of scoring chances created, and scoring chances just means, you know, one of the last two actions leading to a shot. So it could be a dribble, could be a foul drawn, could be a pass. In scoring chances created, he's top 10. In expected assists, he's top 10. In key passes, you know, passes leading directly to a shot from open play, he's in the top 10. He's Johnny on the spot for that second goal, which was like, as soon as I saw that pattern of play, I'm like, oh, this is going to be Robin Lud scoring a goal from the messy spot. You know, it's just, he's so good in every phase of the game, and he's not eye-catching in a lot of ways. You know, he's not going to have the crazy highlight reel at the end of the season, but in terms of doing all the stuff that you want out of a midfielder to get your team some wins, dude is legit.
Yeah, look, never trust a Norwegian to do something a Finn could do 3 or 4 times better. Am I right, Anders? Right? Correct? Yeah?
Are we gonna have Robin Lud on the decks here for us next week?
We should get Robin Lud on. By the way, Evander will be on with us on Thursday, and we're trying to do more and more player interviews on Extra Time, particularly on Thursday. So if you have any ideas, guys you want me to talk to, please hit me up. You know where I'm at on Twitter. I hear from so many of you. Mostly on refereeing decisions on Saturday night. One thing on Minnesota before we go, Cindy Hoffbeck, a soccer parent and MLS fan who listens to the pod. Thank you for rocking with us, Cindy. Hit us up and said, could you please give some recognition to the most underappreciated center back in MLS, Michael Boxall of Minnesota United. I think that the league has no idea how good he is. I am sad that he doesn't get noticed for who he is as a person and his talent as a player. I believe that MLS could do a much better job of acknowledging talent in small markets. That bias just keeps perpetuating itself. MLS has a responsibility to correct this, and we have checked the box. Our responsibility is filled, Cindy.
I hate that
thanks
stuff.
To you.
Columbus is a small market. We raved about Columbus all last year. Cincinnati's a small market. We raved. Like, both of those places are smaller
Lake,
than...
Is Salt Lake a small market?
Salt Lake is
Whoa,
a small market.
It's Extra Time's Man of the Match Day. Chicho Arango is balling. Lionel Messi, who? 4-0 in Chicago. Real Salt Lake just put a smackdown on the Fire, who we will get to in a second.
Okay.
2 goals, 2 assists.
I'm going to spring one on you here.
Oh, God.
Worst, and Weeby's not prepared for this, so we'll see where he goes. Worst personnel move from LAFC. Selling Walker Zimmerman for a million in GAM, or selling Chicho Arango for essentially a million in GAM and $6 million to Pachuca that turned into a million in GAM.
Oh, that's a horse race right there, isn't it?
Those are two of the worst personnel moves of the past half decade. Just complete disasters.
I'm going to go Walker Zimmerman. You know what? No, I'm going to go Chicho Arango, because I don't think LAFC would give Walker Zimmerman ultimately what he wanted, which was a designated player contract. It didn't make sense for them in their structure. They weren't going to be able to hold on to him in all likelihood. So I'm going to go Chicho Arango, because holding on to him likely means, I mean, look, just on the percentages, they have a much better chance of winning another MLS Cup last year.
Yep.
Any MLS Cup you are on the brink of winning and don't win is by definition a club-changing missed opportunity. So I'm going to say Chicho Arango. Because he's walked into RSL and he's like, yo, I wasn't the man in LA. And that, maybe it grated on him a little bit. It never really seemed like it from the outside, but clearly he and Steve Cherundolo had things they just didn't quite see eye to eye on, whether that be the way that they wanted to play, his role in the team, whatever. Well, he walks into RSL and Pablo Mascherini's like, bro, this is your team. This is you, man. You're the record signing. Where you go, we will go. And Chicho Arango is putting RSL on his back and just straight up dragging them to the top of the Western Conference. It's 2 goals and 2 assists. Now, the 2 goals are their goals. Anytime you score one, that's a good thing. One of them is a beautiful, perfectly weighted, just nobody saw it coming through ball from the Chicago Fire to Chicho Arango, who, credit to him, he was prepared for the moment. He's always sniffing. The other one, Chicho Arango is hiding behind Matt Crooks on a corner kick. It's Chicho freaking Arango by himself. He's hiding, bending down. It's like a cartoon scene. and is wide open on the back post.
It's the Fire, so yeah, cartoons. Need.
Keystone Cops. So look, those were great. It's the first goal scored by RSL Doyle that really...
The holdup play where he releases...
Yeah, gets my heart going. He like comes in, the little chop back.
Was it Barajas he released up the left?
No, it was Katranas, I believe. Right. And look, for the way RSL wants to play this year, way a lot of teams in MLS want to play. They're getting their depth, that is to say, penetration beyond the back line from either outside backs or wingers who are pushed extremely wide. In RSL's case, it's Andres Gomez, who we'll get to in a little bit, and now Katranas, who is integrating. But he can do everything at an extremely high level. Drop in, do that. He's played the 10 for him this year, has been incredibly productive in that role. Okay, just be a number nine who just hunts, who just sits on the back shoulder. Okay, cool. I'll just go collect goals that way. Chicho Arango, right now, I think this is the best we've ever seen him. And we saw him
without a doubt.
Very, very impressive form with LA. But this is it, man. This is his high point. I hope it doesn't stop here.
It doesn't look like it's gonna. And the talent around him, you know, Barajas is an impressive young player. Diego Luna finally got into the box, got himself a goal. And you could see the weight come off of Diego Luna. Andres Gomez making that year two Goss theorem jump. The big thing to me so far, though, is the interplay between Arango and Crooks. I think that elevates the whole team because Crooks's reading of the game and his ability to sort of provide penetration, attack into the depth off the ball, allows Chicho to come back and orchestrate a little bit with his back to, like what you just saw on that first goal. In, you know, going back to how we opened the show with like what is real, what is not real, I think that Chicho being a best 11 caliber player, I think that's very real. I'm not sure RSL are quite as good as the heights they've hit at their best this year. And this is an especially deceiving one to come off of because it was against the Fire. Credit to RSL for mixing and matching on that back line. And I think the goalkeeper, Gavin Beavers, I think he's just 18 years old.
He had a great game.
Had a nice game.
McMath has been very good.
Yeah. So, like, they're a good team. I still need to see more. I need to see more from the way that midfield functions in high-level games before I could buy them as...
You're asking a lot of those guys right now, of that partnership.
Yep.
And there's not really someone to say, okay, well, we'll just push somebody else in. I mean, Palacio hasn't been getting a ton of time, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Ojeda and Anelli have been very good. I think Brian Vera has been very good, and he's had to be in the back line because, surprise, everybody's hurt. That's why they traded for Philip Quinton last week from the Columbus Crew, 200K going to the Crew. Quinton coming back over. They want to play in similar ways. We talked about depth from those wide positions, so it makes sense to bring in Quinton. And this is one of those like very convenient handshakes where the Crew have done an incredible job in MLS Next Pro developing talent, and there's a roster hole that needs to be filled. And oh, by the way, here's 200K.
Right.
Like, I mean, this is what MLS Next Pro can be. It can be Philip Quinton for you or for another team. It can be Tani Oloshe. It can be Patrick Agyeman. Like, the best teams are going to start pulling resources, minutes, production out of all these angles. And that's why our reigning champion has done that as well. So let's get back to Chicho real quick. 8 goals, 6 assists. Messi has 7 and 6. Chicho's played more minutes and significantly more minutes, but it's Lionel Messi. Chris Werenberg hit us up and said, who are you guys taking for the 2024 season leader for goal contributions, Chicho or Messi? Chicho's at 8 and 6 through 805 minutes. As I said, Messi 7 and 6 through 495 minutes. Arango has the lead now, but Messi will miss big chunks of time as the season goes on. But yeah, it's still Messi, as Chris says. So who are you taking in that battle for goal contributions over the course of this entire season?
Come on. Chicho's good. It's Messi.
It's Messi.
Yeah.
It's Messi.
You know, so, like, it's
Messi.
Who are you taking, Chicho or Suarez? Now, Suarez is probably not going to miss time, right?
Interesting. I think I would still take Suarez over the course of the year because I think Messi and Miami and all those other people, they're just going to create so many opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I think I would still take Suarez, but I might have a little inkling back here of like, you know, still the knee, still the age. Chicho might not have those same concerns. But let's just compare Messi and Chicho real quick, just for the sake of talking about the MVP award in late April. How could Chicho do it? How could he keep Messi from an award that it feels like Messi is destined to win? Not because MLS state media wants him, Lionel Messi. No, because he's Lionel freaking Messi. And when he goes on the field, he scores a goal or assists or has multiple goal contributions every single game.
Yeah.
That's why. How could Chicho do it?
Messi has five games. He's played six games so far in the regular season. And five of them, he has multiple goal contributions. It's the first time in history that an MLS player has had multiple goal contributions.
Okay, so I did some math. We're doing math.
Yeah.
He's missed some games. He's missed four games so far for Miami, who have played 10. They've played in every single match day of the season so far. You figure he'll miss more, Copa America, everything else, you know, niggles, etc. We hope, knock on wood, that that doesn't happen, because who doesn't like to watch Messi play? But I was thinking, after 7-6-6, okay, how does this compare to Carlos Vela's pace from 2019, when Carlos Vela went straight up nuclear? 49 goal contributions for Carlos Vela that season. To put it in perspective, 24 games less for Miami. Let's say Messi plays in 20 of them, and let's say he averages two goal contributions per game. He would get to 53. He would barely sneak past Carlos Vela, but it's entirely within the realm of possibility that he does that or more.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely in the realm.
The way Chicho wins MVP is 35 goals, 10 assists, and RSL wins the Sporter Shield. If he puts up numbers like that...
Yeah, it has to be a combination of absurdity in terms of personal production. I also think you would need to have some level of, like, it needs to be how it is now, which is like, hey, everything's Chicho.
Yeah.
Like, Chicho is, it's not that nobody else is doing anything.
There are other good players. We just listed
Andres
a lot of
Gomez,
good players.
Andres Gomez, great season.
There is clearly
he's
one
singularly
star on
the star.
Yeah.
And RSL combined that, or whatever team it is, whatever player it is, with league best sort of positioning.
Yeah.
That's just the reality. Yeah. He's playing so good. How about Andres Gomez? What do you think about him so far? That is a absolutely validating Gauss theorem bump. He is their second best attacker, and it's not even close.
So I still think it's close. All right, he's been super productive in the final third. There are still moments in build-out. I put one in the column last week where he's just not as sharp as he needs to be. But that's why they use him high and wide, right? The way that they play a 4-2-3-1, but it's unbalanced. It's not symmetrical. The left winger, usually Diego Luna, drops deeper and more centrally to help in build-out structure, whereas Gomez stays high and wide, and RSL, like every other team in the world right now in possession, wants to get to that 3-2-2-3 shape. When Gomez has to drop deep, he gets lost. He takes too many touches. He breaks RSL's build-out rhythm. So that needs to get better. But in terms of the final third stuff, well, this is one of the ones where I'm not sure if it's real or not.
Mm.
I know the danger he creates is real. I don't know if the final product is real, right? Well, like, he final, might just be on a heater.
Yeah, he might. Now, I did like his patience and his sort of understanding of where the goal was on his finish from this match, of just like, hey, I got chopped back. I don't got to hurry this. I understand where the space is, where the time is. Let these players run by me and finish. But, hey, it's a good start. It's a good start. Here's a question for you. You hit me with the Arango versus Walker Zimmerman thing. Mdebo hit us up and said, I powered through my fire, receiving an absolute drubbing on the lakefront, but having seen Chicho Arango demonstrate top-class ability in the final third, do you think LAFC would have benefited more long-term with Arango as the designated player versus Olivier Giroud, who, of course, we expect to come in the summer? And I guess Giroud could lead them to a title, but man, it feels like Arango in last year is maybe this regret for LAFC for a while, or maybe they don't regret it at all. I don't know.
Yeah, they don't strike me as a very regretful bunch. To me, you said it before, like if Arango's on that team last year, you have to imagine they win one of the trophies they were up for, because they got to three finals and they lost all three. You have to assume that they would have won one of those. That said, if Giroud comes in and he's awesome and they win MLS Cup, I don't think anybody in LA is going to remember that. I think 2023 will be ancient history by that point. They'll just say, oh, look, we're LA. We have one of the biggest stars in the league, and we have another trophy.
Winning is like the old Men in Black. Like, hey, look into this light, everyone.
Yeah.
Like, what happened? Huh? Well, I don't even know where I was just now.
We're getting a taste a little bit of, well, we'll get to that because we're not at LAFC.
Yeah, hey, so. Chicago Fire fans, we've referred to it, but right now you're that performance was the definition of whack. At home, 4-0, just handing goals to the opposition, not creating much, and Brian Gutierrez hurt in warmups ahead of the game. Whew, it is it's tough sledding, and we'll talk more about that in our pressure rankings later on in the show. Other headlines from around the league, the Cali Classico went vintage Goonies, except for they couldn't quite do the last part that the Goonies always seem to do, which is find the goals to win. 4-3 LA Galaxy victory. But here's a quote from you in your column, Doyle. The Galaxy are still the Galaxy, though, fun in a lot of ways, but so vulnerable in the air or in general and on set pieces in particular that it's impossible to take them seriously as any kind of contenders. This about the number one team in the Western Conference, averaging 2 points per game, 21 goals scored, just pouring it in. But yes, that is now 7 goals off set pieces. I can forgive maybe a little on this one based on the deflection. I mean, it still fits on two hands, but not for long. Grade their contender status.
This feels like a better version of 2022 Austin, where they just had this relentless, really fun to watch, multifaceted attack. Little less dependent on one guy than that Austin was. Though if Ricky goes out, I think LA look a lot different. Defensively, I think they've improved a lot in terms of their rest defense. They're not as vulnerable in transition as they have been in the past. They're still not good, but they're probably just like average or maybe slightly below average, which is when you have
it. Well, it feels like they don't have to advance their entire shape up the field all the time and keep it there, which is going to put you in positions.
And part of that is just like they have three real wingers, really, but like two high level ones. And that combined with Ricky's ability to play through balls means they're off and running. They don't have to, like, they are happy to play in transition. So it's, you know, they have a lot of stuff going for them, but nobody wins a trophy without a good defense. It doesn't, like, other than Miami last year in the League's Cup, nobody wins a trophy without good defense unless you have the greatest soccer player of all time. And the Galaxy have good soccer players, but they don't have the greatest player of all time. And the thing that's going to happen is teams are going to start to shell up more and more and more. We saw LAFC do it, right? And they invited the Galaxy forward and they were able to hit the Galaxy in transition. And then they murdered the Galaxy on set pieces. And I think, like, all right, the Crew were kind of an outlier and then they weren't a great attacking team on set pieces, but they weren't bad. And they weren't bad defensively on set pieces the second half of last year.
I was going to say, post that Orlando game, it seemed like there was a wake-up call for them that the flip just switched. And maybe that flip needs to switch for the Galaxy. And I don't know that it's always completely tactical.
You just said it backwards twice.
Did I?
Yeah, the switch flips.
Yeah, well, everybody knows how to use a light switch, all right? We all understood.
LAFC have made each of the last two MLS Cups. They won the one in 2022. They were a monstrous team on set pieces. Philadelphia made MLS Cup in 2022. They were a monstrous team on set pieces. Like, it is just such a glaring, it's such a glaring weakness. It is hard to imagine good teams not punishing them for that when the time comes, and the time always comes in the playoffs.
For the next 5 games for the LA Galaxy are away from home. At Austin, I know you're sitting here thinking, oh, that's an easy one, right? Well, 3 out of 4 wins for Austin right now. At Seattle, who are going to be absolutely desperate. Then it's RSL at home, not an easy match. At Minnesota, at Charlotte. So it's a big 5-game stretch for the Galaxy, but boy, are they fun to watch right now for their own reasons, but also what they seem to bring out of other teams as well. Miami 3, Nashville 1. It started well for the Yotes, Gary Smith's boys, who have seen Lionel Messi in Miami more than anybody else in MLS. An early own goal from Negri, who was in for Alba. That was a tough start for him. And then, look, Nashville kind of piled on the pressure there for a while, but couldn't convert. Had the opportunities to maybe go up 2-0. And when you don't convert on Inter Miami, and you have problems that are not normal problems for Nashville in terms of giving up goals on set pieces or in soft defensive moments. You lose 3-1. Sergio Busquets with a goal. That's the aforementioned set piece goal. Luis Suarez got an assist in this one. Of course, Messi, 2 goals and an assist as well. But I think the big news is yet another injury for Inter Miami. Diego Gomez, the 21-year-old Paraguayan, goes down after getting stepped on. I think that's what happened, right? Elliot Panico, yeah. And I couldn't quite tell exactly what really occurred there, but it was an ankle injury, said Tata Martino afterwards, very swollen. They were waiting on a scan. We still haven't heard about that. Could be a sprain, said Tata. Could be something worse. We hope it is not something worse. And the sad thing was this week, Doyle, I spent the week looking at a lot of Gomez because we were building him up coming into the match. I was on a call with Tata, with some of the broadcasters from season pass, and Tata was asked basically like, how good can this guy be? How good is he now? And he said, potential-wise, Miguel Almirón. And they got tweeted out. I said it on the show, and people are like, you're insane. And he's 21 years old. Almirón was 23 in his first season in MLS. And Gomez, from a perspective of the intensity of press, the ability to stretch the field, the development we've seen with the ball in both creating goals but also being the final runner, like, you can understand it. Like, if you gave this guy 2 more years, where could he be? And those 2 years, by the way, might not come in MLS, but then to see him injured and look at the laundry list and they still win, it's the young guys, it's Farias, it's Redondo, and now Gomez. It's like the exact opposite of what you might have expected or predicted about this Miami team when it comes to form and health.
And they're grinding through the toughest part of their schedule. Well, the toughest part of their schedule is over because they were knocked out of Champions Cup.
Conca Champions
2 weeks ago.
You're excused.
By Monterrey. And look, now we're going to start seeing Messi and Suarez probably playing 90 every game. I do wish that they were both willing to come off the field every now and again, a little bit more often.
I do, but I don't.
But the thing with players of that caliber is they operate, they have access to a level of performance in terms of how they elevate the guys around them that normal, even great players just can't reach. And so you get a situation where Leo Alfonso, who was a second round super draft pick, comes in and he's suddenly a really effective player because he doesn't have to do any of the heavy lifting. He just
calling this the Robert Taylor effect?
I mean, it very much is.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you want to go back 15 years, the Pedro effect, right? Like, Pedro is a good player. He was incredible for Barcelona because he knew how to play off of the gravity of Messi and that entire midfield. And it keeps happening because of how good these guys are. And that makes it feel like they can survive injuries to Redondo and Gomez. Ben Hakramowski came back this weekend, and they can
Leo Campana, Christoph.
Yep.
I mean, guys that we've sort of forgotten about that were going to be presumably depth pieces that could eat minutes if folks were injured.
Yeah. The interesting one for me is Nicolas Freire. I think he's a differentiator for this team because Miami, you know, they're technically atop the supporter shield in terms of points, though points per game. I think they're fourth or fifth. They do not yet dominate games and strangle teams to death with the ball in the way that last year's Columbus team did down the stretch, or, you know, the best versions of NYCFC over the years, 2019 LAFC, Tata's teams in Atlanta. Those teams would get on the ball and move you around and kill you. Miami, they're winning because they have superior individual talent and pretty good structure. What they need in order to get to that next step is better distribution from the center backs. It can't all be skipping the back line to get it to Busquets and then having him run the show. And so early in the season, we actually saw Busquets dropping deep. And like, it was a pattern, a build-out pattern that's like 10 years old now, or was like in vogue 10 years ago, where the D-mid would drop deep and split the back line. And then it would turn into, you know, from a 4 to a 5, because Busquets he wanted to get on the ball because the center backs were not able to move the game around the way he wanted. But when Ferreira plays, he's actually able to do that at a pretty high level. And so I think for Miami to become the team that, you know, a lot of people, I think, expect them to become, and the type of team that has always made Messi most comfortable, he's got to be out there every week dictating terms from the back line.
There's a reason why Tata identified him and said that's the one we need to bring into our team. We'll see where it goes from here. Nashville, it's pretty dire. Lucas McNaughton was stretchered off in this match. We hope he's okay. I'm just going to read this from your column because I enjoyed the column, but also because it just sort of is a summary of what we probably would say anyway. Quote, as for Nashville, they're caught in a nosedive that looks headed for a tailspin that might turn into a death spiral. The two pillars of their success over the past half decade were their ability to defend in their own area and their ability to punish teams on the break. And right now, they're poor at both of those things. I mean, on the second one, I think of that counterattack that Hani is leading, that he just doesn't quite get the timing or the pass right, and Aviles finds a way to keep it out of the back of the net. And in the past 3 or 4 years, that's just like stamp it goal. Either Hani scored himself or whoever's
giving
running
somebody
with him
a layup,
is tapping it in. And those are the moments that are escaping them. And then when it's, you know, when you're giving up 3 goals, 2.5 goals a game, like that's completely out of sorts.
They're not good defending in their own box. And
everything over the last 3 or 4 years was all designed to basically say, we're so much better at defending service into our own area that we're going to route the ball into positions to dare you, to invite you to serve it so that we can clear it, win the second ball, and be off and running. Like that was the basis.
Walker Zimmerman's injury explains a part of that. It doesn't explain all of it. It shouldn't be this bad.
Well, Atlanta fans might be saying that about their ability to hold leads at home. Don't worry, Kansas City. We will get to you as well. 2-1 win for Cincinnati and Atlanta. Miles Robinson returns home and gets a big win for Cincinnati. Bupenza benched in this one. It was Corey Baird and Yuya Kubo up top. That is an interesting note. What's your sentence that matters here? We don't have to spend too much time, but what's the thing that you would pull out?
From Cincinnati? Or
either game. Doesn't matter. What's the one thing? Somebody asks you, what's the most important thing to know about this match?
Lucho's still an MVP caliber guy, and he'll get you wins. And Atlanta is the Eastern Conference version of the Galaxy. They just have the types of brain farts that teams with that level of talent shouldn't be able to have. Like the first Cincinnati goal comes off a short corner routine. You know, the second one, granted.
I just am watching the highlights in my mind right now and literally hearing flatulence at the moments of failure.
You have two little boys.
That's true. There's 3 little boys running around that house.
The other thing to know, our friend Pat Brennan, who does such a great job covering Cincinnati, he reports at the club, Cincinnati, they're finalizing a loan deal through December for 19-year-old Venezuelan center forward Kevin Kelsey from Shakhtar Donetsk. He is a star for the Venezuelan youth national teams. He's gotten his first cap. He's a Brandon Vasquez clone. He's 6'3". He moves really well. He's got some rough edges that he needs to sand down, but Pat Noonan likes that. We've seen what he already did with Vasquez and the Brazilian who's...
Brenner,
thank you. We know he likes to work with players like that. The other part of this is Bupenza's a forward, but he does not like occupying center backs. He just doesn't want to do it. He would rather drift. He would rather find spaces away from the ball. We've seen it all year long. I think it's been maybe the major issue for Cincinnati's attack thus far. Bring Kelsey in, have him do the Brandon Vasquez stuff, makes Bupenza, you know, 25% better, makes Lucho's life 25% easier. And oh yeah, the left wing back, Luca Oriano, he's starting to look good.
That's what I was going to say. Oriano and Lucho look like they're getting an understanding. Bupenza often, to me, wants to come into those spaces and sort of gum it up.
Yep.
And that's not a knock on Bupenza. He wants to be on the ball. He sees himself as a primary, and he can be, but I think it works better if you have that center forward and he plays a little bit more on the weak side, and now all of a sudden all the gravity for Lucho and Oriano results in him standing at the top of the 18-yard box saying, yeah, just play me the square ball. Like, I'm all by myself. I can hit it from outside the box. I'm really good in 1v1 situations. This could work. Brad Guzan, by the way, said this, quote, "In important moments, we need guys to be able to take responsibility and be better. It is as simple as that." All right. Let's see. How about, no, we got to go here now. Kansas City, St. Louis, one of many entertaining draws on the weekend. The Darby-Cue delivers again. Embrace it. Let it simmer. Let it savor. Savor the flavors on your tongue, the molasses from the sauce.
Why didn't we have this higher in the show? Because I just think in terms of...
Andres and I are pointing at each other right now.
In terms of the way this game pops off the screen.
You're right. You're right. It's a failure.
It feels... No, I'm not like... No,
I'm a coastal elite now. You know, I can't okay, be bothered. I can't be bothered to care about anything that happens.
To me, this is one of the three best derbies in MLS right now. Along with El Tráfico. And
it was heated.
Hell is real.
It was heated.
I mean, the fans were... It was physical. It had two teams that cannot keep a lead for the life of them.
A little hot potato.
What did you see in this game?
Well, I just saw St. Louis bring a level of intensity that Kansas City couldn't match. And I thought
Kansas City got a 3-3 draw. Didn't they literally match it?
No, they did not match the intensity of the match. There were bright spots and good moments for Kansas City that resulted in goals. Like, if you want to run through them, wonderful interchange between Agata and Pulido, and understanding space and timing and how two forwards, or in this case, I guess you would call Pulido a number 10, can play off each other. That was absolutely magnificent. But it was the only thing that Kansas City did in the entire first half. St. Louis was dominating them in that first half. The Tomy goal is very nice. But again, it's sort of an unrepeatable Fontas, incredible, stupid, center backs should not be able to play balls like that over the top into space. And then Tomy in the exact right position, and then an own goal, whatever you want to call it. I mean, like, Shawi would want it, but Roman Berkey does not make that mistake 99 times out of 100. That ball does not somehow end up in the back of his net. It was the intensity. It was one team having an opportunity for revenge on their opponent's field, and I think just wanting it more in a lot of situations. And yes, it's easy to point out the 50-50 shoulder-to-shoulder ones as those, but I just thought the intensity that St. Louis played at, the speed they played at, they speed every game up, and it just did not feel like Kansas City was ready for the game to be played at that pace and at that level. And I don't have a foul on either of those shoulder-to-shoulder challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no way, man. The first one, definitely not. Chris Durkin just sees Tim Leibold standing over a ball in the final third, and he's like, yeah, I want that. And in a game against St. Louis, if you can't match the I want that, you're going to get knocked off the ball. And if the referee is letting the game and letting the tone of the game go, which Alan Chapman was, and I don't think wrongly so in a rivalry like this,
agreed.
Well, then you're going to be behind the eight ball. And then St. Louis had the quality to finish. Not just that one, but man, the João Klaus Willie Agata one, that is embarrassing for Willie Agata.
He's given up eight inches and about 60 pounds.
8 inches? Am I wrong about how like Klaus, physically imposing Klaus Willie Agata?
Klaus is like 6'3". Isn't Willie Agata 5'7"?
I'm looking it
seven?
Up right now. There's no way. Well, 5'9", it says here. But
okay, 6 inches.
How tall is João Klaus?
Isn't he 6'3"?
I guess I've stood next to him and he's very large. He's a very large man. But Klaus, do you think Agata sees him coming? 6'1". 6'1".
6'1". He plays bigger than that. Okay, so Willie got given up 4 inches.
They're both listed at 165. I don't know if that means anything, but, you know, if we're in a boxing match, it might matter. Same weight class.
Man, if those guys are the same weight, phew.
Look, Klaus knows what he's doing. He sees Agata sort of turn that corner and take a long touch, and he's already picking up speed, and he's like, I'm going to barge this dude. And Agata, to me, I watched it many times for instant replay. Of course, you can watch it on YouTube and MLS Season Pass. I don't know that Agata, like, locks eyes on Klaus, but it's pretty clear that he sees a St. Louis player coming toward him at pace. And to me, in the moment where it's like, hey, decide, either you're going to go in here super strong and it's a true, like, it's a 50-50 in terms of your effort level versus their effort level, or you're going to shirk away. To me, Agata just didn't bring the wood and he got it taken to him.
Oh, he got memed and he deserved it. Right, because even if you're giving up that much size, whether it's 4 inches or 6 inches or 8 inches, you can't get You can't get knocked like
that.
We
need Dave here to do the height. He's so good at heights. He just always knows how tall a player is.
Do you consider this a successful trip to Kansas City for St. Louis?
I don't.
They have one win in their last seven. What's up?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't know. It feels like they have another tool. I'm not saying it's one that they're going to use all the time, but they can keep the ball just a little bit better. And they protect themselves a little bit more when they push numbers forward to try to put you under pressure or go on a counter. So a little bit less vulnerable in that sense. But yeah, I don't know, man. There's more. Yeah, I don't know. I think Kansas City, I know. It's like decision-making. And then in this game, intensity, like matching the level that your opponent is at.
Yeah.
But I don't know for St. Louis. I want to like make something up, but I'll have to go do a little more research. You got something?
No, I don't. With either of these teams, it's tough to put my finger on one particular thing. I mean, obviously St. Louis have hit the woodwork quite a bit this year. That's something. You know,
I don't know that goals have been really...
It's fair.
Their issue necessarily, right? Like last year, they would be winning these games because, again, they would dominate the state of the game.
Well, they would also, they were overperforming their goals by a mile last year. And sometimes ball go in is not a super satisfying narrative, but it's true. It's how the game happens. But conceding three when you're dominating the game in a lot of ways and when you're winning the intensity battle, that doesn't bode particularly well.
We shall see. Here's Pierre Vermees' quote. I think you guys are all focused on that. That being, of course, points dropped. It's now 12 at home, 14 overall for this Kansas City team in 2024. And I think you missed the game, he said. I'm not sure I agree with him on that front. He said, you guys are worried about it. I am not. That seems interesting. 6 out of 9 home games for Kansas City. I believe 6 points. And I thought Johnny Russell hit the nail on the head afterwards when he said, look, last year we had to chase all year long. They had to fight and claw, and they were in this like sort of state of, it was just, you know, they were on the knife's edge. Mm-hmm. Had to get results, were always under pressure, and it looks like they might put themselves right back on that knife's edge, because if you can't win at home and you drop points at home, that's inevitably where you're going to be in this league. All right, let's keep it moving. LAFC 2, New York Red Bulls 2, Belonga carries LAFC to a draw. Boy, that was not a vintage moment for the Red Bulls late on. It looked like they had a win in the bag and just couldn't keep Belonga from getting to his spot. Anything to take out of this one?
Just more evidence of the game models for these two teams. It was LAFC coming way upfield and press and play direct. And it was the Red Bulls constantly trying to play from the back and actually defending in a shell a little bit. You know, Red Bulls thing used to be they would trade possession and field position, or possession and space to attack into, for field position. They always wanted to be winning the ball in the attacking third and going as close to goal as can. It's just not them anymore. On the flip side, it really is LAFC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not to the extent that it was under Gerhard Struber and, you know, Chris Armas before him. It's not as breakneck as those versions of the Red Bulls, but it's super direct and it's pretty one note at this point.
Columbus Portland, also a 2-2 game. Timber's pretty lucky to get the points. That Cucho certainly
deserved
the penalty.
We should go back. We should mention one thing. Kai started this game for LAFC, a true center forward. I thought he was pretty good. I didn't think he was great, but it's when you consider Kai is very similar to Giroud in the way that he plays. I do wonder if he's going to start getting more minutes from the start with the first, just because it's basically like useful reps for how we're going to play down the stretch.
Do you think it's that, or do you think Eddie Atuesta being out forces?
I think it's probably at Atuesta being out, but what I'm saying is that I think it's maybe more profitable in the long run for LAFC.
It'll be Giroud when he gets there, right?
Yeah.
So you'll see Bogus drop if Bogus is on the field. Hey, shout out to Aaron Long. Hope he's okay. Really scary moment early in this game as he slides to make a defensive play and runs into the post. And poor Eddie Segura comes off the bench in his first touch. is an own goal. All right, back on Columbus, Portland. Again, as I said, Timbers, I think, fortunate to get the points in this one. It's now three straight draws for them, six straight without a win. Columbus in a similar winless run as well, though they did have Tigres in Champions League and two good draws there and, quote-unquote, and a win, an advancement, let's say, on penalty kicks. But now it's Monterrey midweek for the Crew, and they're not in what I would call their best moment. Doyle, what are their chances of knocking off Rayados?
I think roughly the same as what they were against Tigres. I think they'll probably
control. So what's that chance to you? Like, you put it at percentages. It's like, what?
1 in 3.
Yeah, okay.
You know, maybe 40-60.
Yeah, I was going to say 40-60 would probably be the highest I would go. Yeah. But that there's a chance.
There's a chance. And it would have to play out the same way. It would, like, they have to make the games Columbus Crew soccer games. They control the ball. They control the pace of the game. They control where on the field it's played. They move teams from one side, then play, you know, through the lines on the other side. They get guys on the run in space against a single defender. All the stuff that we've seen the Crew do really well against really good teams over the past year and a half now. If the game looks like that, they'll be in good shape, but they could lose anyway because Monterrey historically doesn't care if the game looks like that. They'll just kill you in transition.
Micah in Fort Wayne, Indiana says, I've been following the Extra Time podcast from back in the Simon Borg days, 2012 or 13, and this is the first time I've reached out to you. I've been a devout Columbus Crew fan since I got into soccer football in the 06 World Cup while at grad school at Ohio State University. Love that he called himself a devout Crew fan. Devout is a great word there. Well, I've enjoyed your coverage of the Crew and what Nancy has been able to accomplish with this club in such a short time. It seems you have totally missed covering an historic and definitely drama-filled 2024 Conca Champions run. I inserted Conca Champions, of course. He says, under Nancy, the Crew have done what no other team, not even the first team to win this competition in MLS, this honored Seattle Sounders, has accomplished by going to Mexico and getting a positive result. What are we talking about here, Micah? If you have been listening to this pod, and I don't want to rant at you right now, but I might have to. The first team? History? What?
Yeah. I don't like
that. We just got to the semifinals. Do we not remember the historic wins of the past? Draws of the past? Since we're not even talking about a win? Do we not remember 2018 Toronto? We can't be having this. Dive down that Wikipedia hole right now on MLS performance and CONCA champions. But we're hoping for good things for the Crew, Mike. I just want to establish that. Hope everything's good in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Thanks for hitting us up, man. I'm mostly messing with you. He does say he sorely misses David Goss's random Jewish holiday notes as well as food references and still misses
happy
Bobby,
Passover,
which is a good opportunity, yes, to say happy Passover. Montreal 2, Orlando 2. I don't think we're going to touch this one particularly deeply other than the fact that cardiac cats remain a thing. Ivan Angulo got a stoppage time equalizer, and we're happy to see Mason Toy back and scoring and Ariel Lassiter. Looks like he is a striker for the time being with Kokoro and Joseph Martinez out. But I do want to ask you this. Which of these wins meant the most, Doyle? New York City's 2-0 victory against DC United, Toronto's 1-0 against New England, or Austin on the road beating the Houston Dynamo 1-0?
It's a coin flip between NYCFC's and Austin's because I think those are two managers who maybe would have been on the hot seat if things hadn't gone differently over the past couple of weeks.
I'm going to force you into choosing New York City because okay. We were talking a lot to start about Nick Cushing and what was expected and why expectations weren't being met. They got home and they needed to win, and so far that's two straight.
Yeah, and I think they've taken 7 of a possible 9 on this 5-game homestand. And we said at the start of this thing, well, I said they needed 10 out of the 15 points available to be somewhat comfortable, and they appear to be well on their way. I thought the game plan in this one was good. They played a little deeper, and they allowed DC to come up, and then they countered into space. And it still doesn't feel like the old version of NYCFC. Maybe it never will, right? Maybe this is just what they are now. But what they are now when they have their first choice guys available, most importantly, the Sands Parks pairing in central midfield, is a team that can be pretty good with the ball. Now it's a question of can they get a center forward who puts the ball in the back of the net? Because poor Moussaf Bakrar is just, oof.
Yeah. We won't belabor that one, Moussaf. Come on, man. Get some goals. I'll put you in my Patrick Ajiman shrine zone. get a couple finishes your way. That's Whack is where we will end this show.
Wait, Rounders. No, you made me take NYCFC. I'm going to make you take Austin.
Well, Ragone scoring a game winner off the bench against your rivals in a game you've had no business winning? Hell yeah. That's got to feel good for Austin. And I know
it doesn't feel repeatable, does it?
No, but I know it feels terrible for Houston. It doesn't matter.
Do you think Austin fans want to hear something about regressing to the mean?
Nah, I don't think so. I was trying not to.
But they like when you play the hits, Weeby.
Yeah, that's true. But they got 3 out of 4 on winners, so I'll hold that back for a little while. Maybe next week. Anders, I'm sorry. Seattle are officially Whack. If you look at the bottom of the Western Conference, there they are with Dallas and San Jose. If you look at points collected in the West, there are 11 teams with 10 points or more. And there are the lowly Sounders down in 12th on 6 points. 1 win in 4 home games, 0 wins in 4 away games. Pain for Seattle. Brian Schmetzer, here's a quote. Jeremiah Oshan passing it on. Sounder at heart. This is one of the lowest points I can remember with the team. And Brian Schmetzer has seen basically like every moment. Pre-MLS moments.
Yeah.
Decades of moments. Gianni says, how do the Sounders turn this around? What are we seeing? Now, certainly the red card played a huge, both red cards, played a big role in this one. Jackson Reagan stepping on the calf of Ryan Gauld. We won't belabor this point as Anders throws up the air quotes. I've got an instant replay for me. It's a clear red card, not even a question. And then just horror tackle from Alex Roldan, mm-hmm. born out of frustration. And it's the frustration that is coming through for this team and the lack of production in the final third yet again.
Yeah, they have 5 goals on 9.3 expected goals from open play. It's Morris and Rui Diaz not finishing, which was the same story as last year. At this point, you drop one or both and you put Denny Musovski in. You know, they went out and they got Danny Musovski, who's a consistent, you know, goal every 180, 200 minutes in his MLS career. You put him in as the starting center forward at this point because the guys who have been there for a long time are not doing the job. That's it for now. I don't think you necessarily panic yet, but I think there should be a lot of pissed off players and coaches in rave green because this team is too good to be so poor to start the year.
All right, let's do the pressure rankings and we'll get out of here. I've got 5 coaches in here that we can rank based on who is under the most pressure. Relieved for now, that pressure is Josh Wolf and Nick Cushing, so they're out of the 5. Nico Estevez in Dallas, Caleb Porter in New England, Luchi Gonzalez in San Jose. Well, maybe I got 4. Frank Klopas in Chicago. Does that sound about right? No, the other one, Gary Smith in Nashville. I think you got to put him in here. So there's your 5. Estevez, Porter, Lucci, Smith, and Klopas. My rundown was a mess, mm-hmm. as you can tell right there.
It feels like there is a tier in here where Porter, because he's new, and Smith, because of his track record, probably have a certain amount of safety.
I think Klopas you would put in that same zone as well, based on sort of lifelong servant of the club. And I think ultimately everybody looks at that situation. I think Frank himself too, and knows that this isn't the long-term solution. He's in a little bit of a like permanent caretaker role.
That is so horrible to say, to think about a team that went out and spent as much money as they did this offseason.
Look, Frank is fire through and through, so he's scratching and clawing and trying to get every possible thing he can out of this team, every result. But like,
all these guys are. There's like, no question.
I know, but like, I mean, just on the fire side, like, is he? I don't think he was. It was like, this is the long term solution to bring Frank back. It was like, hey, the club just needs to be a little bit more settled right now as we figure out where we're going. Frank, get in there and get some points.
I don't understand how all of that is the situation when you've had the same CSO for the past half decade, right? If you have the same guy running the ship for 5 years, isn't that the definition of a club being settled and having like, and this is where it's unfair because we're talking about how much pressure is Frank Klopas under. It's not, It's probably not Frank Klopas.
I think it's just the whole club and the way that they've...
But anyway, the way we discussed it, it seems pretty clear we agree that Nico Estevez and Luchy Gonzalez are probably feeling the most pressure right now. I give the Quakes credit for fighting back from 3-0 down and making it scary for the Galaxy. Galaxy kind of do that to themselves, but still, I think the Quakes' attack has been good at times this year. The goalkeeping has been horrendous in every possible way. And to go from what they had last year to the worst goalkeeper performances of the year, in like, that is huge. The new center backs, fullbacks have not been good. Carlos Grezo is not the guy he used to be. Again, this maybe is not a coaching issue.
Yeah, there's a little bit of an indication here that the Quakes are both bad at goalkeeper, but also that opponents are finishing at a much higher rate than you would expect them to for the entire season. Yeah. But look, Nico Estevez has some, he has some built-in Estevez stuff. There. There's some, a lot of injuries happening to this team, and
the way this team was supposed to be built was upon Iaramendi and Pomacall sort of dominating central midfield,
and Jesus Ferreira
drifting underneath, and they've basically had none of those guys. So everybody's got excuses, but we listed those five guys for a reason. You know, Gary Smith, we talked about it. Nashville doesn't do any of the stuff that they're built. They don't do any of it well anymore. Caleb Porter, you know, he was brought in because the idea is he has championship equity.
Yeah, sure hands to elevate a good group.
And this was a 65-point team last year before Bruce Arena was eventually dismissed. They were playing at a 65-point pace, and the one thing that they wanted to do was win MLS Cup, and boy, they look miles from that. Caleb Porter, his 8-game start is tied for the second worst start for a new manager at a club in league history, only behind Terry Dunfield last year in Toronto. It's not gone in the direction that they want. Thomas Shankalai has been benched. Noel Buck has taken a step backwards. Carlos Heel is not getting on the ball in zone 14 at all, which was something that even under Richie Williams, they were able to get Carlos Heel the ball in zone 14. So all of these guys, it's been ugly.
It has been ugly. 10 weeks in, here we are. What's real? What's not? Let us know. Hit us up. That's the Monday show. Evander coming on Thursday, as well as a Match Day 11 preview. Hope you enjoyed on this Monday. Doyle, it's been good to do it in person with you as well. And Anders, we're sorry. Seattle's whack. That is all. Fiend. Adios, everybody. Enjoy your week. ¶¶